This episode of Tales from the Lot is sponsored by ShakedownT-Shirts.com with unique lot style t-shirts, license plate frames, coffee mugs, and all sorts of things for Grateful Dead, Fish, Zappa, Panic, and more. ShakedownT-Shirts.com, where all U.S. orders over $35 ship free. And just for Tales from the Lot listeners, use the code LOT20 for 20% off of any order. That's LOT20. Hey, real quick, before we kick off this episode of Tales from the Lot, I've got some exciting news to share with you. I've been working on a project called Summer Tour The Game, inspired by our love of following our favorite bands around. It's a tabletop board game where you chase shows, collect ticket stubs, and relive the magic of live music, all from your own tabletop. I'm thrilled to announce that the Kickstarter campaign for Summer Tour The Game is launching on May 12th. If you're a fan of this podcast, then I think you're really going to enjoy this game. You can check out a short video and all the details at summertourthegame.com. So whether you're a seasoned road warrior or a tabletop gaming enthusiast or just looking for a new way to connect with friends, I invite you to check out the campaign and consider supporting it. Every pledge and share and word of encouragement makes a difference. I'd love it if you would help spread the word and make Summer Tour The Game a reality. Thank you, everyone, for listening and being a part of this journey, and now on with the episode. Tales from the Lot, episode 19, from clubheads to deadheads overnight. My guest, George Michaels, is here to discuss his book, Grateful Dead Tour Tales, Volume 1, The Warlock Shows, and much more. Here we go. Hi, welcome to Tales from the Lot. This is Will. My guest today is George Michaels. He's coming to us from New Jersey. He is the author of Grateful Dead Tour Tales, Volume 1, 1984 through 1987. Hello, how's it going, George?
It's doing very well, Will. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. Yeah. I'm glad to have you. I noticed you had a book come out recently, and I was like, man, this is exactly the kind of person I would like to talk to, somebody who remembers stuff, because, I sure don't. So that's awesome. So you're in New Jersey. Is that where you're from originally? Is that where you grew up?
Yeah, that's correct. I'm from northern New Jersey, very close to Manhattan, like a suburb of Manhattan, say, or New York City.
Gotcha. And then, growing up, were your family big Deadheads, and you grew up following the Dead, or what were?
Well, I mean, my family wasn't a big Deadheads. My parents are more. They were from the Bronx and like '50s music and sock hops and stuff like that. So, but my aunt, my father's, younger sister went to Watkins Glen and had seen Jimi Hendrix live and stuff like that. So she kind of took me under her wing in a way.
Yeah. Right. So, what were you listening to growing up? Like, asking for on your birthday.
I would say I started, around the mid 70s getting albums and stuff like that, like the Beatles starting out like that. And then I got into Frampton and all the 70s stuff and the rock music scenes back then. But like I said in my notes back then, if you were into the Dead, you weren't into progressive, people had their own little niches that they loved, but I was into classic rock. And then, in the early 80s, I got very into like the MTV stuff, And I was very surprised at the Grateful Dead, who I was into before, but not 100%, they really came back once I saw them live. came back into my life in a hard way.
Did you have friends that pulled you into that, or did you just kind of, were you reminded of it by something you saw?
Yeah, it was one friend of mine, Kevin Cunningham, and we used to be club kids going to Manhattan. We were like 17, even too young to go in the bars, but they let you in. And then one day his brother Mark said, hey, do you want to see the Grateful Dead up in Saratoga, New York on a Sunday in the summer? And, we said, okay, why not? And it just turned into a thing. It really rained really hard. It was 1984. And I lost my car for 3 hours. I was in a port-a-sand with a girl and my friend also for a while. And the music was cool. They did Satisfaction that night. It was quite a show in the rain, and just something clicked. And then all my friends, we all went from being club kids to Deadheads overnight, literally, to the point where, the first year I had seen like 15 shows right away. We were traveling. The next show I went to was in Virginia, and then I just started going, but not 100% every tour, every show, but,
Right. It seems that once that button is kind of flicked, you just dive in, because there's so much to dive into, really, like as far as past history.
It's like, where's this world been, It's almost like going.
Where's it going?
Yeah, exactly.
At that
point. It was a really cool thing, though,
Right. And so you saw like 15 shows the first year, and then.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I saw a couple in the fall that year. I went down to Richmond. I got my friends to go down to Richmond. Then we saw the Meadowlands shows. But then in the spring of 85, that was a lot of fun. We went up to Springfield and did the Nassau shows when Phil broke out, Tom Thumb Blues. And, man, I went up to Rhode Island that tour, and then down to Philadelphia, of course. I think I did 9 shows on that tour. And then that's what this book is. It goes basically every show, it has a story, is the way I break it down. And the first book I have is about 43 shows I think I go to, you know. Oh. And each one has a story and a title, almost like a Seinfeld episode where it's like, I call it a name, like Half Step Who Knew. And that's about the Nassau Coliseum show when they played I had broken out Mississippi Half Step, and I had no idea it was even a thing, you know, but it was. And, right. You know, I do a whole comical sort of story about it, but it's an absolute true story with my friends, what we do. And it's a lot of fun, you know, surprised how much fun and how much I had to write. I just couldn't stop writing. I would just keep writing. Even on the weekends, my friend would be like, let's go out and party. And I'd be like, well, I'm going to stay home and write. And they'd be like, what are you going to do? But yeah. I loved it. And it really became a love project for me. Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. As we were emailing, getting ready for this, I mentioned that this sort of, I had a thought, just like an inkling of like, man, I should write a book of what happened and any stories I can remember, from when I was following the dead around it. And I, you know, I picked up my pen and I'm like, man, I can't remember anything. It's like little flashes here and there and here and there. And then, so I thought, I should talk to some other people that were there with me, or just other people in general. And I thought, well, you know, I should record it and it turned into this podcast. And so now I'm hearing other people's stories and it's bringing back a little bit of the memories that I had here and there. I get these flashes of, oh yeah, something like that happened to me here and there.
Yeah. Right. I get a lot of the reviews, people saying it brings back their own memories and stuff like that. And, it's sure. true. And it's really nice to hear that stuff, because that's why I did it. You know, I wanted people to remember these times, because they were really crazy. As crazy as they were, there was a lot of rewards when they played some good shows, you know.
For sure.
And everybody was so happy. You know, you'd see people that, you know, would normally see in life that were just kind of, you know, tough, mean, or not mean, but, you know, but they see a Grateful Dead show and they'd just be so kind and so happy, you know. It was just love to see that, you know.
Yeah, that's exactly what struck me when I first went, was the kindness. I mean, you know, in day-to-day life, everybody, you know, I come from the Midwest and it was like a factory town and everybody's all, you know, like we work in factory jobs, you know, I didn't see a lot of happiness and people were probably happy in what they did, but it wasn't like that first time when I went to Deer Creek and saw some people just smiling ear to ear.
Exactly. People who would normally go through their lives with a straight face, all of a sudden these same people are just got a big grin on their face. Right.
Yeah,
and where they want to be, you know?
Yeah, the transformation that can happen.
Absolutely.
So you mentioned the Seinfeld type things, give me one of those stories, one of those things that was just like, so, you know, a teaser from the book or just something that, you know. Like,
all right. Yeah. Okay. Let's see.
Look back on your time following the dead. Like this is the one that really just, you know.
There's so many, you know what I'm saying? Let me hit you up with this. So you want a story, like basically, all right, let's go to that Nassau Coliseum show, the Mississippi. I called it Half Step Who Knew. Mm-hmm. And basically, you know, me and my friends get in the car. We go out there and, you know, drink a lot of beers and go and see the show. We went up to the front row, and I remember the second set they opened up was Shakedown Street. And in the book, I go into a whole flashback of me in the eighth grade smoking pot for the first time and listening to that album. And then I come back into the show and describe how Jerry looks like he just kind of rolled out of bed, because I was basically in the front row for that one because I was general admission. And there I am. And we see the show. And then in the first set, all of a sudden, you know, I'm in the front there and Phil goes up to the mic, which I didn't realize was such a big thing. And he starts singing Tom Thumb Blues, you know, and the whole place just erupts. And that was funny. Now, I mean, I'm just kind of giving you a whole scattered thing. When I do these stories, sure, they're very, you know, beginning to end. There's a middle, a beginning, a middle, and end to each one of these stories that has some fun stuff. I'm just kind of put on the spot here, just trying to make you all laugh, but you know.
No, yeah, that's
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, one of these things about trying to make this interesting is not just make it so mundane where it's like, okay, I'm in a parking lot and then I'm going to the show. You know, there's a lot of stuff I bring in up, relationships and girlfriends and all my friends. I have a whole characters that come in and out, but it's me basically going to a Grateful Dead concert and who I go with and what stories are going on around the whole thing and stuff like that. And as time goes on, you know, life happens. You know, we're all kids when we started out, but then, you know, life starts knocking on the door. What are you going to do with your life? You can't just keep doing this, you know, and that comes into play as well. That's why I think this is an important book, because it really shows what it's like to be such a fan of the Grateful Dead.
Right. We talk about that coming of age. And so this book goes up to 87.
Yeah.
Did you kept seeing shows post 87? I presume.
Well, yeah, I did. In fact, 1988, okay. I saw probably the most. I think I saw 35 shows that year. So I know I couldn't, if I went into another chapter, I'd be another 100 pages. So, you know, and my brother Colin, you know, I started writing this book in 2006, and you know, I put it down, didn't know what I would do with it. I contacted Relics Magazine. They ran a few stories, but it just kind of sat there. And so as it built over time, you know, it grew, you know, and I just didn't know what to do with it. And here I am now. And I've decided to put it out. And my brother Colin said, you know, I said, well, maybe I should go into an 88. And he said, that's enough. I think you're good here, you know, because it's 43 shows and it's a lot of different stories. So the next book will be 1988, 1989, and 1990 is my plan, you know, and gotcha. I'm about 2/3 of the way done. And I'm going to go all the way up through Europe. I did go to Europe and, you know, so I went to a lot of breakout shows too, the Warlocks, you know, so, I mean, I'm a guy who went to a lot of shows and I'm going to tell you all about them. You know, I'm gonna tell you what the weather was like and what the traffic, when the gas prices were, you know, and you're going to feel like you're there. And I wrote it in the first person and I wrote it, you know, as if, you know, you're present tense also. I wrote it in the present tense. So you're going to seem like, you know, you're not talking about the past.
Right. It's happening as you read it.
And you're on the trail, you know.
Tangle free, it's the only way to be. Tangle free, made just for the dready. Are you tired of the daily dreadlock drama? The everyday struggle of trying to make your hair behave can be as futile as nailing Jell-O to a tree. Well, Heady Lot Products LLC has a solution for you. Introducing the Tangle-Free Dreadlocks Hairbrush. The Tangle-Free Dreadlocks Hairbrush is here to put an end to the madness. Say goodbye to the daily tangle and hello to smooth, flowing dreadlocks with this magical brush. It's like having a personal dreadlock whisperer right in your hand. With just one stroke, you'll have the dreamy dreadlocks you've always wanted, minus the circus act. So why wrestle with your hair when you can dance with it? Say goodbye to the morning dreadlock disaster with Tangle Free Dreadlocks Hairbrush.
Tangle free, it's the only way to be. Tangle free, made just for the dready.
Get your Tangle Free Dreadlocks hairbrush wherever heady items are sold. Right. Speaking of that Warlock show, you had mentioned that. And so as I was getting ready for this, I put that on and had forgotten that that's like one of those cassettes that I had worn out, like from the moment that Feel Like a Stranger hits. So I was listening to 10989 and I was like, why am I so familiar with this? And then I realized it's the one from Without a Net. It's like, every little note that's going to happen, but that whole show. And especially when they hit the Dark Star and you just hear the crowd erupt for like 3 minutes, it's just louder crowd than it is music. That's those moments like that are just,
oh, it was unbelievable. Awesome. I went down there with $120 on me, with two friends of mine that were tapers. So that was more like a solo show for me, because they were the first people in the door that night. And we had gotten down there on the Sunday morning, and tickets were still on sale. They had a little trailer there. So we actually bought the tickets for the ninth show, but the tickets for the Sunday night show, where they did Help Slip Flat Franklin's, I went up paying $60, which back then was unheard of. But yeah. I thought something was up and I better buy it from my friend Lisa. She came up with an extra ticket. And I was in the front row for that. And they started help on the way. And I knew this is going down, you know. And then the next night, I went right back to right in front of Phil Lesh on the rail. And when they went into Dark Star, you know, it just blew everybody's mind. And then they did, you know, Death Don't Have No Mercy and Addicts of My Life after they played that. And the lights went on. I was literally in tears, and I wasn't the only one. There was a lot of people just like weeping, crying, and it was just that really was amazing. It really was. I gotta say,
I have no doubt. I mean, as I was listening to it, I was thinking, man, is this like this is maybe the best show of the late '80s? On you know, I don't.
Oh I yeah, heard I mean, I was. I remember doing Good Love, and I'm like, I need a break. You know, I was only 20 something at the time, but I feel like I'm gonna have a heart attack. You know.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, they're just in and out of playing in the band and like just from beginning to end.
I mean, that was really special. And it was just nobody knew. In fact, I was on the Sunday show. I was out there looking for a ticket on like an off ramp from a highway. And I'm out there. My friend Roy was like about 100 yards in front of me. He got a ticket. He comes walking back, passes me. And then a cop pulls off the overpass, pulls me over. I have to get in the back seat of the car. And she writes me up some, I don't know if she even wrote me a ticket, but all she's told me was, we didn't even know these concerts were happening until the other day, you know? So even the cops were fooled. They had no idea we were coming.
And that was the whole purpose. I did a little research and recently about this, and evidently the reason they went by the Warlocks is because the city didn't want the Grateful Dead. They were like, no, we don't want what it brings with it, the whole carnival atmosphere. And so
And what happened in Richmond Warlocks a few years before I think you know didn't help. I think
and so they did it as the Warlocks, and then I guess they only sold tickets locally, and it was on sale just a few days before the thing, so the whole thing was bootstrap underground. And
I mean, my friend Bob Hester, he's the one who told me about it. He said, well, a couple of my friends are going, they're tapers, and I kind of knew them, but you know, I was like, yeah, I'll go. I mean, it's just a completely, we drove all the way down there just on a whim, really. But a lot of other people did. And once they played that first show, everyone was on the phone calling their friends, you better get down here, you know?
Yeah, this is special.
Yeah.
And for those who don't know, Warlocks were what the Grateful Dead were called originally before they were called the Grateful Dead.
And they went by formally the Warlocks is what was on the ticket stub.
Yeah. Right. What do you know why they changed from the Warlocks originally? Was it just...
I heard it was another band was called that. There was another band called the Warlocks, so they had to change it or wanted to change it. Yeah, back
that
then.
Happened, so.
Yeah,
it was a good change, I think.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah absolutely.
Nice.
I mean, when I first started the book, I was going to call it Must Have Been the Roses. You know, that was my working title for the longest time. And my brother Colin once again says, well, what does that mean? And I try to explain, well, you know, I did this all this crazy stuff because it must have been the Roses or something. And but then I just went with, you know, the old Grateful Dead tour tales, you know, which tells you exactly what it is. But a lot of people get confused thinking it's a bunch of different people's stories because they have this other book, Deadhead Stories, out. So but this is really just my story, you know.
Gotcha. And you can get it on Amazon and
that's what I did. Yeah, I just went on Amazon and self-published it myself. So it's all me. And all the publicity, whatever I'm doing, is just, you know, word of mouth. You probably saw something on Facebook I posted, you know, and that's what I do, you know. And I've been posting some reviews I've gotten, and that's gotten some good responses. I mean, my book was the number, like, 15th place book this weekend in music history and criticism. I was surprised, awesome. You know, but I'm up there, you know, as far as popularity goes.
For sure. Yeah. Well, I'll put the link in the show notes. So anybody out there who does want to go check it out, they'll be able to just go straight to Amazon where it's at.
Yeah. I'd appreciate it. You know?
Sure. Yeah. How long ago? So what, you published it in August? Is that right?
I published it in August of 22. Okay. 22, and I had a different cover, and it was actually again, my brother Collins, he's a graphic artist, and he gives me this cover, and it turns out to be an album cover of the Grateful Dead from 2015 that I didn't know about. And then they shut me down and they took it off, you know, after a few months. And then I just kind of put the book back on, you know, without this picture here, which I drew myself, and there was no sales whatsoever. And I was kind of even just going to just give up. And then my brother said, you know, why don't you put that picture you did, you know, with Jerry, with the, you know, the doodle basically. And so I did that. And out of nowhere, all of a sudden I'm selling books. Wouldn't you know it? It's yeah. crazy. But yeah, that picture did it. And it's a cool little doodle I did at work and took me 5 minutes, but it wound up being the cover of my book.
Yeah, I agree with you. I was scrolling through Amazon and I was like, oh, what's that picture?
And then yeah.
The title. So
yeah, yeah. And if you really look close, it's very, it's just a bunch of boxes that turned into Jerry.
Unfortunately, at this point in the episode, we had some technical difficulties. We were sort of able to recover for a few minutes, but this is definitely going to be a shortened episode because of that. I want to thank you very much for coming on and sharing your story and sharing just, you know, about your passion for the Grateful Dead. And I'm glad that, you know, that you're doing what you're doing to keep these stories alive and to keep, you know, so, to let other people know that we had a really great time back when we were following the group. And we don't want to let the stories pass or be forgotten.
Exactly.
Yeah. Awesome. All right. Thank you, George.
All right. Thank you, Will.
All right. Take care.
Take care.
Hey now, do you have a great story about a Grateful Dead show you were at? I'd love to hear it and maybe have you on the podcast. Send me an email at will@talesfromthelot.org and let me know what show you would like to talk about and what made it so special to you.